in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 565. I am Lisa Sheps. I'm joined on this COVID afternoon by Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3, Hornsby, streaming live, I think, today at koop.org. Stick with us.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Players, and you can't stop the beat.
You can't stop an avalanche as it rains.
It is Wednesday, May 20th, 2020, day 7,364 of the COVID-19 crisis. On the show today, we have Michael Furstenfeld. He's going to be talking about his production company, Make Every Media. And then later, we'll be speaking to Rachel Chavkin, Tony Award-winning Broadway director of Hadestown, Indecent, and The Great Comet. And of course, we'll have lively discussions at the World of Theater in Austin, in New York, on Zoom, and around the world. Stick with us. Nicole Shiro, you recognize that piece of music?
I do.
Well, you should, because you sent it to me. But before we talk about it, let me check in with you. How's your week been?
It's been here. And now in my head I have, in 19th century Russia, we write letters, we write letters.
Yep. Yes, because Rachel Chavkin.
Yes, I know. As soon as you said that, it went in my head. Even after hearing the other great music, which is still in my head and stuff. How's your week been?
My week has been okay. It's been, we've had some homeowner crises that we've been dealing with. But it could have been a lot worse, and we're hanging in there.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole nother story.
Different radio show.
Different radio show. Hopefully I'll be asked to be on that one. Hey, you sent me a link to an Actors Fund version of a group of people doing Hairspray, which was just amazing. Do you want to tell folks about that?
Oh, my goodness. So it was, of course it included the original cast from the original movie, like Miss Ricky Lake, all the way down to original Broadway cast, to various Broadway members, to movie cast, to fill-in members, to tour folks, to just plain lovers of this stuff. And it was great. It started off with Melissa Joan Whittaker, Ricky Lake, and you're like, this is great. But it just kept getting bigger. Even Alan Shankin was in there doing it along. Martin Short.
Kristen Chenoweth, Jackie Hoffman,
Blanche, Harvey Fierstein, Andrew Reynolds,
Alex Newell, Alexandra Billings.
Yeah, that was exciting. It was the finale. It was the finale number for Hairspray. You can't stop the beat.
Which is great. So it was just amazing. It's been done in the style that we've been seeing a lot of, which is the squares of video. But it's very well produced, extremely well edited.
Thought of you and was like, OMG, Lisa would lose her bleep if she had to try that. This looks insane.
So, yeah, it was really good. It was produced by Christopher Sepulveda. I wonder if he's a relation to Eugene Sepulveda here in town. I'm going to say probably not.
I don't know.
But it was really amazing and very well done and a lot of fun. You can get a link to this right now if you go to offstageonair.com. There'll be a link to it so you can actually watch it yourself. It's 4.5 minutes.
It made me stand up, dance, sing. Every single person I shared it with was like, this has made my day. I'm like, it really was so joyful.
And I have to say that I love what they did. It's very inclusive. And in every single screen, at some point, somebody somewhere was speaking ASL. As a matter of fact, Def West was called out as a special thanks.
The credits are amazing. The amount of people that got together to put this on, to do this for the Actors Fund, it was really cool.
We should also say that Randy Rainbow was in it as well.
Rainbow, yes. I was like, who else was I forgetting that I got super excited when he popped up, Mr. Randy Rainbow.
Yeah, and I can't, Andrew Reynolds first showed up, I went, wait, is that Andrew Reynolds? Wait, is that Martin Short?
Martin was getting down in his living room dancing, and it seemed like everybody was enjoying it as much as we were.
Yep. So that was real good. I'd like to thank you for that.
I'd like to thank them for doing that so I could share it with you too.
There you go. Did you happen to watch? Now, we're recording this on Sunday. And last night on the television, on every single major network, was a high school graduation. Did you happen to watch that?
I did not happen to watch that.
It is worth seeing. It was just a wonderful celebration of high school students around the country. And worth seeing. It wasn't necessarily Broadway related, but I liked how that when they would focus on people, it was a mix of artists, athletes, nerds. You know, it hit all the different clicks.
It hit so, all the notes of what makes up high school.
Yeah, yeah. So
and the was, world.
And again, very, very well produced. So I believe, you know, it'd be interesting to look at the quality of these kinds of events 2 months ago versus how they are now, and then how they're going to be in the next couple of months.
You were in my head, because as you were saying that, I was thinking, like, boy, we've started to master to do this. Like, look at where we started and look at where everyone's at now, and it's kind of mind-blowing. And I don't see all of it going away, and I still see it modified a bit.
Yeah,
which was why some of our conversation with Michael was fascinating to me, because we touched upon some of that. We'll touch upon it later,
and our audience will get to hear that in a relatively short time. So the big announcement that's happened since last, although it's not a surprise, and you and I have known this for a while now, is that Broadway is closed until after Labor Day.
Yeah.
And probably it's going to be after that.
Yes. And I meant, and shame on me, I meant to send you a really interesting news piece that was done yesterday that I saw. I record all the morning news. I think it might have been the Today Show. I'm not sure. I'll send you the link. But they talked to Brian Stokes Mitchell and a whole bunch of other artists and talked about Broadway being closed and open and what this means and how they think it'll go further and change. It was really fascinating. I looked up and I'm like, that was a really well done piece. I haven't seen a lot of really good, well done news lately. And that was really well done. And I was great to see the arts being talked about, because it's been making me angry that I don't think it's what everybody's upset's closed.
So this was a story that's basically a New York City story, but it has some resonance here. And it is about the League of Independent Theaters and the organization called Indie Space that is petitioning to have the government force landlords to not charge rent to small theaters who cannot survive a long-term hiatus without any kind of revenue. And I think that's really interesting. There is a town hall on May 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern time that folks can register to, and there'll be a link to the playbill.com article on offstageonair.com. I plan to attend it because I'm, you know, as someone who runs a theater here in town, I'm invested. So is there any interesting stories that you want to touch on this week?
Did you read the, I think I sent this one to you. Did you read the story that I sent you about all the theaters making their seasons, salting their seasons, changing their seasons, and where it's at? Like, pretty much most of the regional theaters around the United States aren't even going to have a rest of the season and probably only come back for partial next seasons. And how they're calling him, how they're shaping him, how they're doing different amount of shows.
Well, everybody is rethinking. And later on in the hour, we're going to talk about what the Guthrie is doing, which is a pretty big deal.
That's one of them. Yes.
Well, the Guthrie is actually on the forefront of everything. And we're going to talk about that soon, but not yet. There is an article in American Theater Magazine. You may have sent it to me, or I found it on my own, that is about theater makes and unmakes their summer plans, talking about what's happening.
Yes, yes, yes. That was another one that was very fascinating, too.
Yeah, so
there's some good reads this week.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. But let's talk about our guest, Michael Furstenfeld.
Michael, he makes me smile.
Locally here, you know, we've done so much and people are going online and doing a lot of virtual stuff that I wanted to reach out to Michael Furstenfeld, who that's basically all he's doing these days.
Yeah, he's helping all those people make all that stuff and get it out there and do all sorts of things. And it's kind of fascinating.
Which he was starting the process before we went to, before this crisis started.
Yeah, so he just got a little amped up.
Yep. So let's go. Let's give him a listen. Well, we are so lucky to have our very good friend Michael Furstenfeld here with us via Zoom, 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 Zoom.
Zoom, hi, Zoom, Zoom. Hello.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to touch base with you and see, talk about your company that you created called Make Every Media.
Cool. Thank you for asking. We created this company right before the pandemic, and it was such timing, such timing. we created it because we want to help people make things, make media, all different kinds of media, podcasts, movies, apps, games, live streaming events. And, you know, we had this whole thing planned. We were going to start this podcast incubator where we took on three new podcast series from the community and then started a Patreon page and tried to get some support in that way. But then incubator became kind of a bad word. So we decided to call it a hatchery instead. It's that a podcast hatchery. Because we don't want to do any incubating. There's enough incubating going on all over right now. Really, we just want to help these podcasts hatch and get their own 2 feet and then become full series. And so we've taken on a narrative podcast involving Ken Webster and written by Beth Webster, no relation.
Mm-hmm.
And we've taken on a documentary podcast called Deferred Dreams by Chelsea Hernandez, local documentary filmmaker. And that's about student debt, the student debt crisis.
No, there's no crisis there.
There's no debt crisis anywhere.
There's no debts anywhere. What, right? I mean, and this was...
anywhere, especially for students.
In November, we were already recording both of those in November. And so, I mean, yes, the student crisis is still around, but it's kind of a different crisis altogether now. It's kind of changed in that time. The third series that we've taken on is called Realmente Real, and it's with Lily Lopez and Jesus Valles. And it's one of those, you know, friends talking about everything podcasts. So it's three different genres of podcast, and none of them we're getting paid for, and we're spending so much time on.
Well, now, you've been working very closely with the theaters in town here. Specifically, you've been doing a lot of work with Rude Mex with regards to, and I think Salvage Vanguard, sorry. And I'm wondering, now that this crisis has hit, all the venues have shut down. We can't do the theater that we're accustomed to doing. A lot of us are turning to digital media to try to do some kind of art. Are you helping companies make that desire a reality?
I like to think so. This was a part of the plan. The next commercial clients that we wanted to get, even before this pandemic happened, were live video streaming clients, because it's something that we're extremely interested in doing, like sitcom style or interviews that have three camera setups. So we were already on the path to get into that stuff right before this happened. And then this happened and it was like, suddenly everyone needs to stream now. Oh my God. There is so much demand for our expertise.
Right.
But it's like people don't have a budget or anything. So it's like, we've had to really take things one at a time. And I mean, you listed a few, but like, I thought you might ask me that. So I wrote a list.
It's here.
I love the preparation.
Okay. So it started with SVT. They have an Instagram takeover series, and I was called in a couple hours beforehand to figure out how to get my band, The Worry Folk, to be able to do live music on their Instagram thing, the three of us being quarantined in different houses.
Right.
That was the first challenge. Cold Town TV also is a live on Twitch. Cold Town Theater has moved most of their programming to Twitch. And one of my bandmates did a little jingle for Cold Town TV. We were talking with them about getting that stream online. They have a stream person already on staff, so they're good for the moment, but we were there at the beginning. The Ballad of Robert E. Lee by Ground Floor Theater. I don't know if you're familiar, but...
Heard of it.
But yeah, you were one of the people we helped on early on in the first few weeks, really.
Right.
And Austin Playhouse's Gratitude Readings with Cindy Williams did one of those. Now Pinfold Theater is doing a digital offering called The Voice Lesson. And we're helping them figure out the music element of that. Like, how are we going to get four people harmonizing on Zoom? Or the appearance of four people harmonizing on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and also throughout all of this, I used to produce a lot of theater through a company called This Theater. And so our fiscal sponsor is the Austin Creative Alliance. And we ended up getting involved in their stream as well, helping them stream several weeks in a row, a live happy hour with artists like, how are you parenting and doing your art during COVID while quarantined? How are you teaching during COVID? And I'd love to keep that series going too. It's just, oh my God, there's so much. And the secret is we're not getting paid for any of that. And it's like, yeah. Oh my goodness, I need to...
We've been doing a lot of talking. So the theater companies, we have a lot of Zoom meetings. As a matter of fact, they all happen on Friday. So I've been spending my entire day on Zoom. I should tell our audience that we are recording this on Friday. So we're a few days ahead of the show itself. And everybody's saying the same thing. We're all doing these digital offerings, and there's no real good way to monetize it.
Yeah.
So we are what we gave away for cheap before, we're now giving away for free.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we were about to make a business based on streaming, and now it's like everybody's kind of doing it on their own as cheaply as they can, because we have to watch our budgets. Everybody's got to watch our budgets. I will say. Oh, go ahead.
No, go.
I was gonna say. One of the things I'm most excited about moving forward is a project that Hidden Room Theater approached us about, and it is an app.
Awesome.
And so they are, you know, their theater, obviously their plays have been furloughed like everybody's plays. So Beth Burns from Hidden Room has decided to pivot into providing a theater-like experience over an app that we are building for them. And I'm very excited. I can't say much more than that.
Well, that's that is very exciting. And that's what...
That's exciting, because I was going to ask you, what are you doing with apps as regard to this? So this is great, and hearing about this is it gives me it whets my palate and makes me want to have some more. I'm like, ooh, can't wait! This is exciting.
So you, Michael Furstenfelder, kind of a Renaissance man. You do a lot of different things, as you mentioned. Your theater production company, Dis Theater, which I learned today. I never knew what that stood for.
Do yourself. Yeah.
What is it?
Do it yourself. Do you see theater?
Do you see theater? Yes. I didn't know. I learned that today as I was looking at some of the stuff that you've done.
That's hilarious.
But you're also very busy performing, and you work a lot at a lot of different theaters. And I must say that I'm going to say almost everything I've seen you in, I have enjoyed your performance a lot. So that says a lot. And you also have a tech background, correct?
I can't blush over podcast very, but I'm blushing. I'm definitely blushing. You would see it if you were watching.
And you're also a tech person. And then, as you mentioned earlier, you have a band and you play music. What don't you do?
He's a jack of all trades.
I've decided that I'm not going to be a painter. The more time I spend on this planet, the more I realize what I need to focus on is producing and getting like people's help. Because I could spend all my time coding an app. I could spend all my time doing music. I could spend all my time producing podcasts and editing.
Sure.
But that's kind of where this thing, this new company that Dis Theater has transitioned into, Make Every Media, that's kind of where that came from, is that like, I can't be satisfied by just one of these things, you know? I love theater, I love live performance. I also love producing and editing something and making it perfect. And I also love-
Kind of a way to be around all of it.
Yeah, I love creating interactive experiences as well. And the only way I can do all of it is by not trying to do all of it, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, got it. Is there anybody else that's like a major player in your team that you're working with that you want to give a shout out to?
Sure. I'd love to give a shout out to Seth Cleveland and Tyler Parks and Seth Cleveland. They're my two teammates right now who are doing a lot of the video editing and audio editing. This is the first time in my life I've been able to like trust some people to do editing for me, and it's opened everything up. It's like being able to put a team together and trust each other really does open up a lot of possibilities.
It is a big step. I hear you. Michael, so how can folks get a hold of you if they're interested in getting more information about podcasting, or if they want to get some help, they have a theater company and they want to go online or do some web streaming? How are they getting a hold of you?
You can go to our website at makeeverymedia.com. You can email us at makeeverymedia@gmail.com. You can go to our Twitch page at twitch.com/makeeverymedia. And lastly, if you want to help us decide which of these mediums, which of these podcasts to prioritize, you can vote at patreon.com/makeeverymedia. And I think that's my time.
And is that where people can listen to some of the podcasts that you've already created? I know you were working on one about spaces as when we started to lose, as SVT was closing, you were right there with them the whole time. Where can they go to listen to all that stuff?
So this all started as a podcast called Make Every Media, which you can subscribe to at Apple Podcasts using most of your podcast catcher apps.
Well, Michael Furstenfeld, thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and On the Air, the coronavirus edition. We really appreciate the time. We always love having you on.
Thank you,
Michael.
Thank you, Lisa and Nicole. It's awesome. Great to hear your voices.
Great to hear your voices. Just love that Michael Furstenfeld. He did a great job.
I know. I'm telling you. And he touched upon a lot of what we were talking about earlier. That virtual stuff is what I think, because what if you could sit in your living room and watch it live virtually in a weird way? I mean, that would open the doors to people who can't get out. I don't know. My mind is blown. Too many things.
All right. Well, let's take a little break and we'll come back. We'll talk about some of the local happenings and hear a little bit from Rachel Chafkin. We'll be right back.
In 19th century Russia, we write letters.
Hello, I'm Kay Ballard.
I'm Leroy Reams.
Hello, I'm Lillian Montevecchi.
Hi, this is Martin Burke.
Hi, I'm Noel Paris, and I'm in Billy Elliot the Musical.
Hi, I'm Ben Main with the cast of South
Hi,
Pacific.
Hi, I'm Robert Biederman in the cast of South Pacific on tour.
This is Stephen Mills, Artistic Director of Ballet Austin.
I'm Ben Vereen. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP. Hornsberry Austin.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You know, I totally forgot to say this at the top of the show, but you and I got stuck on one of the performers' names who did Ladies Who Lunch for the Sondheim celebration. And I'm sorry, it was Audra McDonald. How did we forget that, both of us?
I don't know, but I mean, I'm shame to me. I just gave myself a little old nun tap on the hand. Shame to you.
You know, maybe we need to get some younger blood in here that doesn't have our kind of memory lapses.
Yeah. How do you forget that?
Yeah. So
that's
listen,
when normally I would have texted you and sent you a text going, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe that. And it drives me nuts. Oh, yeah. Well, at least we were in it together, Lisa.
That's right. Well, before we switch over to some of the local stuff and then talk to Rachel Chafkin, I wanted to go back to what we talked about with what the Guthrie Theater is doing. Now, they have decided to close down until March of 2021. But one of the things that is remarkable is a video that Joseph Hodge did sort of explaining it. And I want to play a little bit of it here. It's a little edited version. There's 2 minutes of it.
Many have begun to stream plays, which I fully understand and I support. Some have asked, is this the future of theater? And personally, I just don't think it is. Watching actors perform on screen is engaging and entertaining, and it's an art form in and of itself, and we have a name for it. That's what film is, and that's what TV is. But I don't think it's theater. The very premise of theater is gathering people together in a shared space to enjoy a shared experience. And what we do on our stages today is exactly what we were doing 2,500 years ago. Exactly the same thing. In 2017, a study found that patrons' hearts beat at the same time during a live theater performance. This type of synchronicity has been linked to trust, to empathy, to friendship, the removal of social barriers, camaraderie that doesn't happen in the same way when we watch a performance virtually. To be quite frank, the Guthrie, and I believe all theaters, are struggling right now. We're struggling emotionally, we're struggling financially, we're struggling artistically, because we can't practice or experience our art form, which relies wholly on in-person collaboration and people coming together. I'm not worried about the theater at all in the long future. It's been around 2,500 years. It's essential in people's lives. As we move through this period of profound uncertainty, I find it comforting to know that fundamentally our art form is the same as it ever was. We're storytellers. People gathered at the Theater of Dionysus 2,500 years ago to hear stories that reflected their dreams, their loves, their fears, and that is precisely what we do today. Given this centuries-old tradition of telling stories on stage, I would argue that theater is not some old-fashioned practice that has survived accidentally. Perhaps it has thrived because it is one of society's proven necessities. I've spent my career encouraging people to leave their homes, come out to the theater, any theater, and as we say at the Guthrie, to celebrate our common humanity. At some point in the near future, I will ask you to do this again. Until then, I encourage you to stay home. Take care. We miss seeing you at the Guthrie, but I'm grateful that if we have to be in this, that we are all in this together.
All right, that chokes me up, especially when he talks about, and this is actually one of the things that we didn't keep in to this particular edit, was the public's perception that the arts are non-essential. And that those of us that are in the arts, it's just hard to hear. But
it's hard to hear because if you go online on social media, where everyone's at now, that's all that's keeping everyone alive and what's being shared and done. And so,
but what I loved about his what I loved about his message is he talks about rightly that, you know, theater will survive.
Mm-hmm.
Theater has been around since ancient times. You know, everybody keeps talking about theater's been around since the ancient Greeks, but it's been around before that. The cave people acted out their day's hunts, and that was theater.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing, and people can take inspiration from his talk. So I want to remind everybody that the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards is going to happen. We talked about it last week. They are happening on the 31st of May, and people should look at them.
Yes, I'm excited about that.
I am as well. The other thing we need to talk about, just one of the things that's going to be offered online, is Lincoln Center's production of Carousel. And something I'm really looking forward to is the Nance. That was the Nathan Lane vehicle.
Yeah, I was about to say Nathan Lane. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's coming up in June, May and in June. So those are going to be some Friday night things. And evidently Lincoln Center is going to be doing something every Friday.
I know. And Holland Taylor's Anne, filmed at Zach, is going to be coming up on PBS on June for great performances.
Wonderful. Well, we should get the
First week in June. Yes.
We should get the information and share it with our audience next week.
Yes. Holland is super excited.
And then there's another article. And again, you may have sent this to me. I think you probably did, from American Theater.
I was on an article like binge sending people stuff right and left. So excuse me when I flooded your mailbox.
No, you're great. So this is another article from American Theater Magazine. I think you sent it to me. It is an article that says, the title is Still Standing, How Companies Maintain Theaters Minus Theater. And it talks about all these beautiful theater buildings that are sitting empty, and they still need maintaining. And it's just an interesting article talking about what different people are doing and what different companies can and cannot do, because not everybody has staff to keep things running.
Yes, that article was super fascinating. I think San Antonio's in there.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I think the public theater was in that one.
The public theater is absolutely in there, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very, very interesting. I really thank you for sending that to me.
No, I'm glad to talk about the, I should say the issue this month in print, the front cover is just a photo of a ghost light.
Yeah. Yep. Tell people what a ghost light is.
Ghost light is the, when you leave a theater and turn it off and everyone goes home at night, the only thing left standing and left on is a light on stage, normally kind of wheels and is on a pole. And it's for the spirits and protectors and all the places that leave your lights on for those in the theater.
What I love about this is that there's so many theories about where it came from and why it came from. But bottom line is probably it came from the idea of we don't want people falling in the pit when they walk through the theater when it's closed.
And you know what's so funny is that's what I said one day to somebody, and I was like, I never thought of that. So I'm glad you said that. That was a random thought.
Yeah.
I like the romantic story behind it.
I do as well. Ginger Morris, who we love, invited me to be a fly on the wall during a Zoom conversation that many students and teachers, theater teachers, had with Rachel Chavkin, and I was allowed to record it, and I wanted to play some of her answers for folks, because it was the highlight of my life, and you know, I think she's such an incredibly talented director, and oftentimes when you go and you listen to people speak from the heart, you go, they're all right. But this just cemented my admiration for her. And I just want to highlight a few things that she talked about and let people listen to them. So these are basically answers that she gave to high school theater students and or their teachers. And one of the ones I found interesting, they asked her, do you approach every show you do in the same way? And here's her answer.
Each play or musical wants a different culture, right? Because it's a different writer, it's a different language, there's different rhythm in the language, there's different ways that the characters listen to each other. And so I think about setting up every element of the process, including actually sometimes even how loud or quiet I am, how fast I speak. Like if it's a delicate play, then I will adjust kind of naturally my sense of self to match how I think that play wants to be. Whereas if it's like a big ass musical and it's like, let's organize the 76 trombones and blah, 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 then I'm kind of going to wear my like sports coach hat. From my days playing soccer. So I actually really enjoy with the eclecticism of my work from like a two-person storytelling composer event to Hadestown on Broadway and all the things in between. I enjoy sort of changing who I am in the room based on each bit of material.
So that was one of the things that I thought was very interesting, because a lot of directors will approach a script the same way. And what I love about her is that she looks at everything as a new and separate experience. And you can see that.
That's how I would have to be. I it's different for me.
Right.
And I'm on the same page.
Right. And you take the works that she's most noted for these days, which is Indecent, The Great Comet, and Hadestown. All very different, except probably the same in that they're all very heady and thought provoking. My philosophy of theater is that theater is a benign dictatorship with the director at the helm, so that the director's word is law. And I was very thrilled to know that she pretty much feels the same way. And one of the ways that came across was when the question came, and this I found kind of an amazing question, but I'm finding it relatively common here in Austin. The questioner asked whether Rachel Chafin gets involved in the design aspects or just lets her designers do their own thing. And here's what she said.
No, I don't believe in free range. I am totally oppressive and deeply involved from the beginning. And my designers and I love each other. I mean, we have a great time together, but I, right off the bat, I come in and I will say, not like, what are the sockets on the wall look like? Like, I don't think about those details at all, but I think about how I need the transitions to function. So Lempicka, the show, the big show that I'm working on right now, which was maybe going to be going to Broadway next spring. And now obviously that timeline has shifted, but we have this show is exquisite and it's massive. And it, to our Les Mis team, right? Like Lempicka has to travel from Russia, the Russian Revolution, 1917, to a train to Paris at dawn within bars of music. And so one of the first things I said to Ricardo, our set designer, is I think everything is on wheels. And I think the cast is moving them. I think that's part of the choreography. And now we've begun actually having a bit of automation get involved. But so I told Ricardo how I imagine the space functioning. And I said, I kind of have been thinking a lot about a movie studio because the musical opens and ends in California, in Hollywood. And Tamara de Lempicka, the woman who the show Lempicka is about, she was a painter and this like fabulous personality. And she sort of saw her life like a film. And so I said, I've been thinking a lot about studios and maybe these rolling lights and blah, blah, blah. So I will like vomit all the ideas over the designers. And that's where they begin their work. I'm not interested, or I'm interested in as an audience member, but like if I'm working with, I'll just stick with Ricardo Hernandez, who's my set designer on Lempicka, and we've done a number of shows together now. I'm not interested in Ricardo's Hamlet. I'm interested in my production of Hamlet that Ricardo's gonna design. And equally, like that's what Ricardo is interested in, is he actually needs me to tell him what this production is about, what I think it looks like, what I think it feels like, which painters I've been thinking about as I picture it. If there's a sculptor that I'm really inspired by, or a music video I'm really inspired by, or a piece of music. Because Ricardo maybe is going to design, he's a really thriving designer. He teaches at the Yale MFA program. He may design 20 productions of Hamlet in his life. And so hopefully each one is going to be really different. And that's going to be the very unique conversation and magic that happens between that director saying what they think the world is and where that designer kind of picks up that ball and runs with it down the hall. So yeah, that's, I'm definitely not into a free range chicken.
I love that she's such a dictator.
I was about to say, I feel like you want to let them design and have creativity, but if you don't know what the director's vision is, who is the captain of the whole entire ship, then it doesn't matter what other people are in place.
What I love about Rachel Chafkin is she doesn't stifle, and I don't think any good director does stifle their designer's creativity, but they work together.
No.
They work together to find, you know, the vision that is in the director's head and then is filtered and fixed and made real by the designers.
Exactly. I mean, let's face it. If you don't work together and figure it out and get the vision together, it's not going to be.
One of the things that I really loved that she talked about early on in the conversation, a student asked her about going to NYU and why she chose NYU and what advice did she have for students going through. What she said, and I don't believe this is in the recording, that about advice, which I just loved. She said she doesn't give advice because her experience is her experience, and her truth isn't necessarily going to be the truth for anybody else. But she did talk about NYU and her experience there, and how important it was to just see everything, and why NYU in New York City is a great place to do that. Let's listen.
I consumed everything. I was at this theater, and I include student theater. I was seeing the work of my classmates. I was ushering for free off Broadway, which doesn't have a unionized usher force, so you can sign up and actually see shows for free by volunteering as an usher on a given night at different off-Broadway theaters. So I got to see a lot of shows that way for free. And there are lots of also downtown, you know, sometimes a ticket might be like 10 bucks, so I could swing that. So I was probably seeing stuff 5 or 6 nights a week. Because I love art so much. And we could include movies in that if you don't have access to theater in that way. We can include, again, whatever local museums might be around you, or museums being online with their art collections. And at NYU, I had the great fortune to come into contact with a lot of practitioners, of artists who were working and talked about their shows that they were doing and whatnot. So that understanding that everyone is working constantly, other than right now, at every level of our industry, in tiny rooms, in big rooms, and that while the space between tiny rooms and big rooms can seem large, actually, there are people who move between those worlds all the time. And so I spent my entire 20s actually working in what's known as the downtown theater scene, which was very DIY, very kind of more far reaches, more grassroots, a lot in Brooklyn. And somehow, because I just kept doing the work and my tastes aligned with stuff that seemed a little bit more commercial at times, that was how I ended up going there. But I still work all the time with experimental artists, including my company. So, sorry, sirens going by in New York. For me, college was a time of learning how big the world is, and that I couldn't begin to know it all, but I may as well try. And that has been constantly energizing. So maybe the only advice I would say is take joy in it.
Truer words could not be said, don't you think?
I know.
I would encourage our audience to, you know, we have a lot of theater here in Austin, Texas. And not only theater, we have obviously music, but we have dance, we have museums, we have a lot of cultural things that we can all experience. And wouldn't it be great to just experience one cultural thing every single day?
Yes, we are one of the few cities, I think there's only 5 or 6 in the United States that have all the principal art within it, such as a symphony, a ballet, an orchestra, an opera, theater, yeah, dance, the whole nine yards. And we have it all here at our fingertips, our museums.
So I would hope that our audience would take advantage of that. And the last thing I want to talk about or listen to today from Rachel Chafkin is what her feelings of the future of Broadway and what's going to happen in the short term. And she started off talking about Joseph Hodges' video, and then she's segued into Broadway. Let's listen to that.
You know, Broadway has just announced a suspension, at least, or that they're returning tickets through September. I think it will be longer than that. Mostly because, you know, the science is still changing on a daily basis. As it's going to, that's not obviously blaming science. It's the reality of where we are. and we are not in a situation that is in control. And that is terrifying, but we are all in it together. So there's some consolation there. And when I begin to feel very despairing, for better and for worse, I do think about like my grandparents who lived through the Great Depression and are extraordinary humans and had a very, not singular, but sort of shared defining experience of their generation. And many, you know, all of us will have that who have a living memory. And the theater is going to be very, very, very impacted by it.
Not the cheeriest way to end our show, but truth.
Right? I was like, you know, truth. What's that? Truth Hurts. Isn't that the name of that one song?
Love Hurts.
I know Love Hurts, but I think there's another one about truth, too.
I don't know. I hear it will set
There's probably a Broadway song some listeners like yelling into the screen for us right now that goes with this. And I'm sorry. I'm not thinking of it offhand.
It's okay. Well, that's it for the show this week. Thank you, Nicole Shiro, for joining me virtually for our show.
I love you, Lisa Shepps. I'm always here to join you.
I love you, too. And I'm not even falling apart. So, remember to like us on all the social medias, and all the links will be on offstageonair.com, where you can also click and get our podcast sent directly to your home computer.
Yes, we just arrive each week. We're there.
Okay. All right, folks, we'll see you next week when Nicole and I will look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye-bye.
We're sitting and watching Jason play baseball. We're watching Jason play baseball. We're watching Jewish boys.